I'm very pleased to welcome Fremantle Shipping News, Michael Dowler of Fremantle Tours. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I've been meaning to invite you along for a long time, but you're so damn busy out there on the streets of Fremantle, Michael. You and Lucy have got this business running. How's it going?
We're having a fantastic time. Yeah, I think it's actually, we just had our fifth birthday.
Fifth birthday.
Yeah, for our tour business. So it's within that pandemic, of course, but this summer in particular has just been delightful. The 22-23 summer has just been really fun. Lots of locals getting back into tourism.
Yes.
Post-pandemic, thinking I want to explore my hometown. But of course, having some international visitors back is a real delight.
Must talk about that. Expectations of people who come to Fremantle, you take them on tours. And of course, I keep running into people who are discovering Australia, where they were born and their parents were born and their grandparents were born, and they've never seen.
Yeah.
Is it a bit like that for Fremantle?
Yeah, very much so. I often say that international visitors, even interstate visitors to a degree, see more of Fremantle, if not Australia, than a lot of us locals, because we get our little habits. We go see our favourite place, or we always go back to the same spot within Fremantle. Or if I'm to go to Perth, I go to the same restaurant because I like it and I don't explore for a couple of hours. And it's very much like that with Perth locals around Fremantle. But what I always like to say when I have visitors on tour is that every perception of Fremantle is equally valid. If you've just stepped off the train and you've just walked 50 metres to meet the tour, you've never been here before, you already have an idea of the place. And it's as valid as mine as a fourth generation local or as a person who's lived here a while but wants to get to know it more, who's also on the same tour. So it's nice to make sure everyone feels pretty comfortable.
Well, you've just said something which helps to answer another question, and that is Fremantle. How did you discover it? You've been here four generations?
Yeah, it's home. Yeah, as simple as that. I think it makes it really, has a deep connection to place, as a lot of people do, irrespective if you live here or grow up here. But I grew up down in South Frio on Rose Street.
And it's a lovely street.
Yeah, and Walker Street down that way.
Yes.
And my folks are divorced, so I spent some time weekends in other parts and down Freeway. And my Nana still had her place next to Tippy's Pizza.
Oh, did you?
So I spent a lot of time with her. So we'd walk in together.
Well, if you take Rose and Walker and next to Tippy's, you've sort of got a big, perfect triangle.
Yeah, it's not a bad spot. And I have really strong memories with her of walking to Cully's, getting an egg sandwich, and then going to the Crocodile Farm or going to the movies together. Or we'd get the train to Perth and go to the art gallery or museum together. That was how we spent time together. So
it's really an interesting older people's perspective. When I was a kid and a teenager, these people who are now were the age that I now am, would go off to Fremantle. It was town. That wasn't city of Perth. It was here. Tully's, you know, there were Palouse, people coming to do their shopping. I dropped an old lady off I hadn't met. They were waiting for their Uber recently and it hadn't come. And I said, where are you going? And the old lady wanted to go to Tully's for old time's sake.
Yeah. So I think it's nice that I love that we still have that
Cully's, Cully's.
That yes. Deep connection with place, and that our history, our colonial history, is so short comparatively. Mm. But it means we almost still have a verbal history. So when I talk to my grandparents and, you know, my Omar's 89, my Opa's 93. So when they talk about their life, and they can talk about their life and that of their parents, that covers a lot of colonial Fremantle. So we still have this lovely communicative, lots of tall tales, lots of, you know, my Omar's version is different to someone else's grandparents, yes. Which I know differs very much from the history, but that's okay. I think it's really alive.
It is. I mean, that's what oral history is, and you can't particularly fault it. So Fremantle Tours, how did you come up with the idea? What happened?
Well, I'm now, I guess I've been a tour guide in Western Australia for nearly just over a decade, actually. So prior to Fremantle Tours, by university debt, I'm a conservation biologist, and I had specialised in feral cat control in my honours. And that took my wife and I to work up at El Questro in the East Kimberley.
Yeah, beautiful place, but they've got wild cats up there.
They do, but the point of our trip was tourism. So I got my first sniff of tourism there. I was getting paid to go gorge walking and helicopters and forward driving, and I got to mix my love of the environment and my passion and knowledge, and then also I love people and talking with people. So then it was like, oh, these two together, this is where it's at. This is so fantastic. And especially once you get paid to gorge walk or go forward driving, it definitely ruins every other job you're going to have. So I pursued tourism from then on in.
Now, people listening to us may think nothing ever goes on in Fremantle, but we can hear the drills behind us. Yeah. There's obviously a lot going on.
There's always something happening in Fremantle. You just have to be curious. You have to look.
So you got into tour guiding, which can be a really interesting job, and you've got people skills, which are essential, of course.
Yeah.
Have you done other jobs in tour guiding people here and there?
Yeah, we did. I used to drive tour buses up and down the coast to Exmouth and Albany, and you would do all the driving, all the cooking, all the tour guiding, the snorkeling, the hiking. It was pretty bedlam. And then we lived in Margaret River, and I walked the Cape to Cape track. So it's about 135-kilometre, seven-day walking trail. So I just walked 100 k's a week for work. Keeps you out of mischief.
And keep you very fit.
Yes.
When I met you, you were in another business in Fremantle, I think. What were you doing there?
We also have two cafes that we've owned in the 5 years that we've had Fremantle Tours. So we, in Margaret River, we worked for really inspiring small business owners, and we realised, oh, we could do this ourselves. And why do we keep leaving Fremantle to do tourism when we could just be at home? And that was the spark to then come back and create our business. And once you start one business, I don't know, we very much enjoyed that balance and the being able to choose what worked for us, and also to live by our values and work aligned with our values. So very quickly, we opened our tour business in November, and by the February, we opened a cafe in South Fremantle called Mostly Sometimes.
I really enjoyed it.
It's such a good space, and it's still continuing today, which is delightful, with different people and a different name, but it has that same community feel to it.
Where Price Street meets South Terrace.
Yeah, the old RAC building is what it was. Yeah, it's quite a wild space, and it's that really beautiful collaborative feel of Fremantle. You know, it's an old retail shop that's got a hairdresser, a beautician, a cafe, and a yoga studio.
People love to wander into it early or later on in the day. And where was the other one?
We then had actually a fun time there. We sold that after 2 years and went on a pretty amazing European holiday in 2019, just pre-pandemic. And we actually signed a lease in Central Frio 3 days before the restrictions came in for the pandemic. great timing. Just behind Kakula Sisters. So it's a little 4-metre by 4-metre room.
It was really a sort of a hole in a wall almost, wasn't it?
It was a hole in the wall cafe. You had to walk through a spice shop or through a driveway to get to. So the best parts of the venue was that it was so hidden and it was a real niche local space. And the worst part of the venue was that it was such a hidden
space. Sort of a space. The beauty of it was, though, you felt you'd discovered something when you went into it.
Yes.
Some of the tenants in the building around it would come down fire escapes and order their coffee, and others would come out of a seeming hidden passage from Kakula's sister and so on. It was really a lovely space.
Yeah, and I think what underpins that venue, which was called the Dellas, which is my wife and I's surname, and Mostly Sometimes, was community. We wanted to know everyone's name, you want to know their coffee order, you want for them to come in and order something, but you never talk about what they're ordering because you already know. So you're talking about the kids or the project they're working on or whatever we had in common, if it was bike riding or Fremantle, and it made it feel really good and people would feel really welcome in there. And it's an experience, I think, is the key.
I mean, you're right. Spelling people's names correctly is always a good start. Remember their names, or at least one of them, and their first one preferably, is really good in that line of business.
I think it helps. Because I often say, if you've got that wonderful welcoming space, an atmosphere, and you remember their name or their order, you've really built up a really high level of experience. And then if you make a little mistake, or it's really busy one day, so it takes a bit longer, there's way more buffer. Whereas if you're a really amazing quality product, but there's no buffer because you just bang it out, you don't know their name, or there's no experience there, as soon as your quality differs, they say, see you later, mate.
Well, there's also an advantage, of course, in someone forgetting what your usual order for coffee is, not giving you the latte that you always had.
Yeah.
And you're given a long macchiato or something, and you say, hey, this is really good. I think I'm going to change
my order. Yeah, it can be like a nice journey together. Exactly. Yeah, we really like that that customer relationships. And then it's beautiful that through ongoing throughout that period, we also had our tour business. So the cafe is operated as our home base. It's where we stored our bicycles for our bike tours, and often it was our meeting location. And we'd be able
that's where I remember then first seeing you outside Dallas, outside Sister.
Mm-hmm.
And there you'd be, and reminded me of all sorts of tours I'd taken in exotic parts of the world, principally in Spain, where you'd turn up on a street corner and see someone who looked like a tour guide, whatever a tour guide's meant to look like. And off you went walking. In 2020, I think you won some Senior Fremantle Awards for the business.
We did. Oh, yeah, wow. We in 2020, we won at the Business Awards, the Chamber of Commerce Business Awards. We won the Business of the Year, which was a huge accolade. We in
Absolutely.
That year, we actually beat out Sirona Capital, who built the new FOMO development, you know, which has injected $270 million of development into Frio and set us on a different course, you could say. So for a little itty bitty husband and wife Frio business to pip them at the post, we were very proud of. But to be honest, the same year and actually the following year, we won another award that I find much more representative of what we do. And that was the Outstanding Contribution to Fremantle.
Yes.
And that's one that I feel hits home, because that's what we want to achieve.
Yes.
And the premise being that when you come on a tour with us, and of course we're touching on history, but we're also bringing in the small businesses, how to best enjoy the display, the place, the shops, restaurants, bars.
Yeah.
So in theory, a tour with us is benefiting
everyone
in Frio. That's how we want to treat it, is it's not about me, it's about everyone benefiting.
It's interesting, isn't it? You become engrossed and involved and embedded in Fremantle, and you keep discovering so much about it. When you started the walking tours, did you have sort of a standard walk that more or less happened whenever, each day of the week or particular days of the week? Was it in that sense unvaried, and then did it grow into other sorts of walks?
We actually, the whole concept started as a bike tour business, which is something that we adore doing when we travel. We find you get a bit further. I love bicycles. I adore cycling, and I think it's just an amazing way to get orientated. And as a pace of travel, you can hear, you can smell, you can still talk to people. So it's really involved versus a car where you're just disinvolved from what's happening. And we very quickly realized if we're doing all the work to make a route for cycles, we might as well make a walking tour as well. And we're very glad we did, because for maybe every one bike tour we take six walking tours. So if we were just bikes, we would have gone bust years ago, to be honest. And it started quite formulaic, as you said, Michael, like it was to keep us going and keep it all moving. And that route and that topics that we touch on and themes and eras, history has changed and shifted and morphed over those 5 years, especially with new areas of town being, I guess you could say, opened up or renewed, has definitely, well, we're going to go there now. So we walk there, and the topic of conversation changes every single tour. Depends what the people are into, where they're from, all those elements come into it. And it keeps my job interesting. I think if you're a tour guide and you get bored with your job, it's your fault. Whereas if you're excited, if I read a book about Jewish history in Fremantle for that week,
a wonderful Jewish history.
It's phenomenal. So for that week or 2 weeks after, the tour is just peppered with this sort of taint to it. But then if I read a book about urban planning and pedestrian spaces, well, that view perspective shifts through. So it's nice because you get to talk about what you're interested in.
Do you have some specialised tours these days?
Yeah, we have these like lovely niche tours that focus on street art, which is a huge passion of mine since I was about 15. Never partaking, just observing. I found the whole culture quite amazing. And when the pandemic hit, actually, we thought, we want to offer something for locals that's a bit different. And we felt that locals thought they knew the history of Frio, which isn't always true, but they wanted something a bit more exciting, maybe that they'd do in Spain or Melbourne. So a street art walking tour, and the popular one at the moment is a street art beers and bike tour. So we can stop for a couple of beers and talk about that microbrewery culture in Fremantle. And we see about 65 artists in 3 hours. So it's
amazing, and it's I mean, people come to Fremantle very often thinking that that sort of thing's here, but they need some guidance.
You need to know where to find it. And or need, they yes. don't associate Fremantle with those certain things. And Freo has that older mentality of, say, maybe being like a very alternative arts, sort of even hippie centre, as well as that really working class elements to it and the heritage. But of course, there's been so many eras and changes that there's a little bit of everything, but you just have to know where to look. Otherwise, you can miss some pretty key features.
Well, I'm pleased to hear you're doing something with the cycling and the beers, etc. One of the best, as it turned out, walking tours I ever took was in Venice. And I can't remember exactly how I got onto this fellow, but he was a lovely chap. We met on a bridge and we went off, and it was a bar, a walk, a church, a bar, a walk, a bar, some lovely little food to eat that was particularly Venetian.
Yeah.
This, you actually on your feet, look up, look down alleys, you do things.
It slows you down. I think that's the beautiful thing. When you're on a tour, you really put on your tourist hat or your tourist glasses, and you really observe with a curious mind, and you're asking questions and you get involved with the place, versus if you're just coming into a place that you know quite comfortably, maybe where you work every day, you put your like shutters on. You don't look for that stuff. You're just going from A to B.
You rush by.
Yeah, you're looking at your phone. Mm. You don't want to talk. You just want to get there, and you miss so much.
I wonder, often wonder, when I pause and look up, how many people miss the great Sam Kerr?
Oh, so many. That's a phenomenal mural.
Isn't it something?
And I had four Perth, like south of the river locals on tour on Sunday, and we went past that very mural and none of them had seen it.
Astonishing.
Yeah.
And that's on Norfolk Street.
But then something I love about that mural is that now it's getting a little bit more attention because there's this lovely niche, I guess, as venues are sort of flowing away from the Cappuccino Strip, and previously that's been in the historic West End, like Bretton Common or Strange Company in that Bannister, Nan, Pakenham Street area. But now there's a little push happening down Essex Street and Norfolk Street to New Ruin or Luna and the Patio Bar in there and Cold Creamery. And the Flaming Galah is this little niche unto itself. And that then makes people enjoy a space differently.
Yes.
It pulls them into different areas of town. And hopefully then they notice these sensational murals. Or even, for that matter, the mural of Dorothy Tangney on the side of the Norfolk. That's...
It is.
Exceptional.
So you learn about political, social, undoubtedly economic history, the history of Fremantle, the indigenous history of Fremantle, which is harder to find, of course. But when you started, did you discover that you knew a lot yourself, or did you have to, in fact, bone up on it? You've mentioned reading about Jewish history, for
example. I thought, yeah, we'll open a business back home. We already know everything, and very quickly realised that, like most West Australians or even folk who live in Frio, I know the broad sweeps of the brush, the eras, but not the details. And that's where some of the amazing stories come out. And for me, dates and names, as I put it, are very important to put things in order. But when you walk away from a tour, what you often leave with is more of a broad sense of place and the stories, the anecdotes. And you don't come away saying a year that a building was built and the architect. You come away saying who was shot there, or you know, why it's changed over time, why it was pivotal to save heritage. So we loved digging really deep and discovering all those layers. So it actually took, we opened in the November, and it was the concept, like fully formed, we're going to do it in the February of that year. So there was that entire period, what do we call it, 10 months of research, which was very humbling because I really thought I knew it. And during that time, a lot of reading, a lot of historical texts, but a lot of time spent with the elders in my community, being my grandparents or people that I knew through Frio, just saying, what was that era of life to live in? Because I know what happened, but what was your day-to-day like? And that's the feeling. That's what really sets us apart from other people, is it's a real lived history tales.
History is such a wonderful thing. I keep discovering the more I get into it and talk to people and read something else that not all the history that gets written down is necessarily accurate.
Yeah, it's always from the side of the victor or from the popular opinion at the time. And I've certainly read books about the same person, different books with completely opposing opinions of the character, But all the facts are the same. But it's a, even history is still an opinion. So it sort of comes back to that idea we said earlier, where it's that beautiful tall tales and stretched verbal history is often more, I find, realistic in some ways, or definitely more relatable for the average person who's just come for a little staycation.
In the course of your tours and investigating what you knew and then more about Fremantle and identities and places and things and streets and the whole fabric of the place, were there some things that took you by surprise? Things that you thought, gosh, I really didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Kept shaking your head about it?
Yeah, certainly. I think for me, the Fremantle Society and the saving of the heritage.
Victoria Hall.
Yeah, Victoria Hall. And even the old TAB building
yes.
on High Street.
Yes, amazing.
Which
building, it rather tells you everything, doesn't it?
And I love that building as a tour guide. That enables me to tell that story.
Yes.
Whereas if that building didn't exist, if it had been replaced since then, we actually lose that part of history. So to be able to stand here and say this was built and everyone said no thank you very much. And it really sticks out as this, it's the only brutalist building in Fremantle, and it's heritage listed.
Well, I think a word other than brutalist is required.
Yeah, it's a pretty, it certainly almost looked better as a TAB than it does now, but it grabs people's attention and
doesn't
it enables.
Why is this here?
Yeah, and people notice it without you speaking. And we do a little trick, we stand opposite and look at the old original ANZ Bank and the original Commonwealth and the National Hotel. And I say, oh, we're standing in front of one of my favorite buildings. Can you guess which one? And then, so no, it's the one behind you, and people invariably say, what? So it's great because you get people interested. So that, for me, that whole era is really obviously vital
yes.
for Fremantle and setting, I think part of it, Fremantle synonymous with heritage.
It was the 70s around Australia and many parts of the world were that conservation era, the environmental decade, and that intruded the urban environment. But not in every place. The city of Perth, St George's Terrace, lost a lot of its fabulous buildings in that same period.
And it's a nice connection to draw, to say often I would say that Perth would have been grander than what we see here, without a doubt, and denser, but, well, they don't have it. You know, so the fact that we have the highest density of heritage buildings in Western Australia, you know, it's not just a feeling, it's a stat, and it really shows, but it's all thanks to community and people standing up and saying no. And that part of the story, something that you can then draw parallels with so many places of the world, but also in Frio, still to this day, we're very passionate people. And it doesn't mean we always agree, doesn't mean we get along, but it means we have an opinion and we're happy to share that and stand up and write the letter and go to the talk. And I get stopped on every tour by half the time someone we know, giving us a little hassle, having a chat, or a business owner, but half the time, just a random person, and we'll be talking about a building or a development, and they'll come over and say, oh yeah, I love this. Or they'll come over and say, I bloody hate it, mate. And that's great. I'd much rather an opinion than just beige, boring blur.
Well, even though the architects fight mightily amongst themselves, they I think they love the debate about what buildings they like and don't like. Murray Slavin's MSC building nearby to where we are on Cliff Street. I just love because it somehow brings Cliff Street and what's around it to life.
And I think it somehow at a glance fits in so gorgeously, and yet when you look closely it resembles a ship so nicely, and they've got that little top still with that height, and the fact that they use the gorgeous heritage building next door and have maintained that the dome of the folly on top. I think it, for me, if we're going to do something new next to heritage, it obviously has to be very sympathetic, but simultaneously I don't mind if it makes people have an opinion. I'd rather something that makes people go, I hate it, I love it, than just a something that just doesn't exist almost. It's there, but it doesn't draw any attention and doesn't help the space.
So I've asked you about did things take you by surprise. A corollary, perhaps, to that question is, having done this and become immersed in Fremantle and walked the streets and engaged in explanations and discussions, are there things that you've seen that you think, boy, I'd like to do this or that there. I'd like to not necessarily remove something, but see something happen. Are there things that if you were the emperor for the day, you'd like to achieve in Fremantle?
Certainly. Yeah, I think the biggest take home often is there's these amazing hidden spaces, if you will, like we're in now, and backs of buildings or that are used. But there's a lot of them that are not being utilised, or certainly not to their potential. Like the old Princess Theatre.
It was empty.
Empty. And it's still got the all the remnants of that theatre, and that's where my opa learned to speak English, with my Omar sitting next to him explaining the words to the theatre. And so how fortunate that the building's still there and I can still connect to that history. But you've got to use it or you lose it. And at the moment, it's just sitting sterile there. And that could become so many things. So for me, not a specific location per se, but as an example, that use of space a bit more creatively. But also, I think in a broad sense, we've had this big wave of change in Fremantle. Biggest in my history. I'm only 33. I'm a young guy. And the recent change of the Department of Communities moving to Fremantle and the Wallilup Kurut and FOMO development is easily the biggest change I've seen in Fremantle in my life, and had biggest repercussions across the board and got a lot of talk, and it has positives and negatives. But I feel like we could tap back into our community sense a bit more and have a little bit more local representation, especially with art and schools and families contributing rather than huge commission murals, which are really powerful, but also Fremantle Primary School or the kindergarten. And that then goes hand in hand with people in Fremantle who are having a tough time. And we're a really empathetic community and empathetic council, I would say. That, you know, there's really, we want to be a supportive place, but everyone needs a place to feel comfortable and safe, and some simple things like some spaces for people to be later at night that are safe for them, or even where they can go to the toilet, because all the toilets get locked at 7 p.m. and then it's no wonder how people have to go use the restroom where there's not one. But if you've got that amenity that everyone can feel safe and have a duality of purpose, because a lot of places are used 9 till 5 and then they're essentially off limits to kids who want to skateboard or bike ride, through to art activations, through to homeless people needing spaces to sleep. Like, there's actually so much potential, and the community of Frio are very quick to engage in that. You know, often even where we've stored our bicycles for our tours or tape tours even, has just come from a conversation where someone's been standing in an alleyway and I said, do you reckon I could come down here with this group of people? And they're always, of course. Hey, you know what? I'd love to show you this. And they take us in their yard, and we're very open space and very house proud of the town and of our own homes or buildings. So I know that it's there, but we're just sort of getting caught up in the year that it is, and that you want to be a bit more separate from your friends and neighbours, but a bit more openness would be really special, I think.
So far as the profile, the demographics, if you like, of the people who take your tours, yes, you've touched on this to an extent, but where have people come from? We've had the pandemic period as well. Are they all self-funded retirees? Are they mums and dads with young kids in the pouch? Tell me about them.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag. Pre-pandemic, well, like now, really what it is about 25% visitors from overseas. That used to be quite a higher number, but that's just building back up. And that's mostly from the UK and a little bit from Europe, a little bit from the States, and also the UK and Southeast Asia are quite prominent locations for visitors because it's so easy to get here from Southeast Asia, broadly speaking. But the majority are locals, that means. So that means if your family come visit you from over east, they come on a tour, and then as a local, you probably jump on with them as well. So it's a sort of two for one. You always get a bit of the family and the people. So a lot of Perth folk. And as I said earlier, the tour just last weekend had four people from, I think it was Mozzie Park and Spearwood, you know, so really close by. And we've done tours with all the people who are just from inner city Frio, like Mike and Joy Lefroy and a big group of their friends who all live on like Nan Street, and taking 25 of them on a tour as some pretty... I don't usually get nervous before a tour, but having literally local historians on a tour with you is it's a bit nervy. So we get everything in between. And at the moment, it's really lovely. I'm starting to have tours again with just visitors. No one from Perth, people who've never been here before. Germany, Canada, Hong Kong, all sorts of places. And that feels really exciting because they're really open and see the good in a place. I often leave a tour with just visitors feeling really refreshed and excited, even more, I'm a pretty excitable fellow, but even more excited about Fremantle, because they come to it with such a beautiful open mind. They will draw analogies to their home or other places they've traveled, and it just puts that pep in my step again, and how they view it. They say, oh, it's so clean, it's so easy to get around, the people are so friendly. There's, oh, I just feel so alive, there's hardly any empty shops, and you just feel, oh, great. And then the next tour, you have a few locals on tour, and when you live in a place, you look at it differently. And it's amazing, the same place can draw almost opposing perceptions. And I spend a lot of my time on those tours advocating really strongly to say, hey, open your eyes, let's look differently. It's actually really exciting. And then also statistically, we're busier than other places and shopping centers and all sorts. So there's a lot going on. You just have to look at it through those eyes. And so there's a real duality to our tours.
There is, I imagine, for all tour guides, wherever they are in the world, in my experience, and particularly with someone like you here in Fremantle, it's a deep sense of responsibility when you deliver the word to people. They're going to take away what you've told them.
Yeah.
That's pretty onerous.
And share it along, and it is quite onerous.
Do you feel that?
Certainly, with international guests, my job's easy. It's a great place. It's easy to show off. We can walk from our tour, it takes 2 hours. We only cover 4Ks, and in that time you can see a World Heritage prison, you can see a brand new beautiful city centre, a historic heritage area, and then have your feet on the beach. So it's just all there. It's really exciting. And then, so that, I always feel actually quite happy showing it off. I feel very comfortable and confident that they're going to go away and tell their friends and family how much of a great time they had. Especially by coming on a tour, they get to then discover the places after the tour with a bit more confidence and get a real locals version of the place. I do feel it to be quite onerous when it's locals that I'm trying to almost convince or re-convince that it's a great place, who come in maybe with a set attitude, and I find I really take it on personally, a responsibility to get them over the line to come back more often or to see it in a different light. And if it means they're going to come back to Frio more frequently than they would have, well, that's a win. And if they're the next Barbie they go to and someone says, what are you doing on the weekend? I said, oh, you know, I did this tour in Fremantle. And they're probably going to go, oh, you're in Frio. And you're like, yeah, it was actually amazing. Did you know there's a new this and it can do this thing, and the best young chef is in Frio, the best chef, the best small bar. All these elements are all right here. They become an advocate themselves, and to their little connection and family and group, that word spreads, and it's just slowly, incrementally shifting maybe ingrained perceptions of what it was, shifting it to say, hey, those things are all still here, but there's way more on top. So it can feel pretty intense. I guess it is a responsibility.
Everything you've told me about yourself, the four generations, walking the streets of Frio, 4Ks, you've mentioned South Fremantle, of course, we've got North Fremantle, East Fremantle just outside the Fremantle municipal borders, but another, we've got O'Connor and Hilton and Whitegum Valley and Beaconsfield. It's a fascinating area. What is it about Fremantle as a 33-year-old, which you find exciting that got your back and keeps you here?
That's a really good question, especially framing it by looking at the whole space, because it is so diverse and has each area has its own feeling. And then within those areas, there's all these little vibrant hubs that are unto themselves. But I think it always comes back to community at the end of the day. The fact that you can go somewhere, if you're sitting at a local cafe in any of those areas and see someone you know, and they'll probably come over and sit down with you and have a cuppa, or at least pause and have a little chat and keep going. And maybe you actually don't even know their name or what they do, but you know them through that interaction, and that's really powerful. It changes your behavior around people and in the area because you know these folks. And so I like to frame it that we're like a small country town. You know, there's just over 30,000 residents in those areas of Frio in total. And if you go to Geraldton or Albany, there's 40,000 residents. So we are a little country town within greater Perth, and that's why that feeling is so different. It is got this little high street, that connection, the 80% of businesses being locally owned. It means you are probably going to, person pouring your coffee or a pint or selling you something, probably owns the place. And you have those conversations, and it keeps you coming back, and it keeps them at the front of your mind. So when you are sitting having coffee and someone says, oh, I do really need a new pair of boots, you can say, go down to Bodkins. You know, they're still there. Go in, 52 years they've been there. Like, and it just, that little conversation just keeps it all connected. Or even to the extent where we have really long-standing friends now that have come just from that sort of coffee relationship that then builds to actually friendship and, you know, more. So it's that, for me, community as a person who lives here, as a resident, and for what we do, the business community, I think, is really a supportive, friendly, helpful community unto each other, but also broadly saying, hey, we want you to come and have a good time.
There are lots of things happening around Fremantle. There's been a great debate, leaving aside the old traffic bridge, which is on the face of it still going, mm-hmm. with the port. We know the container commercial port is planned to go to Kwinana to the south. Have you started to think, I'm sure you have, what Fremantle might look like in, feel like in 20 years' time?
Yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? I don't know, it's a huge change. And again, I guess if you were, I said earlier, the thing Fremantle's synonymous with is heritage, but also it's the working port, the beautiful cranes or giraffes or dinosaurs. And
imagine if the cranes weren't there.
And that's something, personally, when I've thought about it, no matter what happens and how it's utilised, I would personally love those lines of sight that we still have down near Pakenham Street, that you can still see all the way to the port, and that your B shed and A shed, C shed, they're all still there and you have that connection. And if there was some cranes left, that's their heritage. They've got, they would have to become cultural.
I can see heritage. The bumper stickers now, keep the big giraffes.
Yeah, but we often then have this discussion with people on tour and they say, well, of course you'd keep them. I said, oh, but who's going to pay for it? And with only 30,000 residents, it's probably not going to be the city of Frio. You know, the upkeep, my dad's worked at the port since he was about my age, at the Port Authority and then at P&O, which is now DP. So I spent a lot of schools, after schools, over under those cranes. So for me, it's a really deep connection. And again, I really have a deep understanding of how much it costs to keep them upright and safe. And that's a huge issue, as we've sort of briefly mentioned, with buildings, as they're disused, become challenging to upkeep and expensive, and that falls to someone. So I'm glad that it's 20 years away, because we can have these really valuable conversations now to say, okay, if the people want this, how can we keep it? And the other thing I often say is, well, what do we want the land used for over there? Do we want it to be an extension of Peppermint Grove and have a beautiful canal, highly expensive area to live that actually benefits very few people? Do we want another vibrant town centre that then would actually compete with Fremantle? Probably not. But, you know, I'm very biased, obviously. I don't want that. I want Frio to keep that beautiful soul here and not distill it. We want to distill that. We don't want to dilute it by spreading it around. Or does it become affordable housing? Because that's, you know, there's the 30,000 people live in Frio. There's also 33,000 people a night who are homeless in WA. So maybe there's pretty good options there. But I like that we get to have these very impassioned discussions, knowing that, unfortunately, a lot of these decisions aren't in our hands. And we can advocate, and the city can then, the city of Fremantle can then, on the city's behalf, say our position is thus, but it's not their land. And often the issue comes as people get annoyed at the wrong people about why things aren't happening. You're like, well, it's not actually, unfortunately, it's not your and my decision. It's bigger than that. The state government, it's Department of Transports, and, you know, the Port Authority, and all these elements. So it's really convoluted, and the discussion about that is a great way for me to then open up discussion about, hey, if you're passionate and if you want to see something happen in your community or another area like Frio, write that letter, get the bumper sticker, you know, go to that town meeting and put your hand up and stomp your feet if you want to, and stand in front of it under the with a sign and say something. That's what you want, and it achieves results. Like we said, from the Fremantle Society all the way through to this day, there's still hotels that get knocked back or amended quite seriously because the community say, we don't want that style of thing. So, but for me, I actually am more excited in the short term about Victoria Quay, because that North Fremantle change is a long way away. But having announced that roll-on, roll-off cars are moving quite soon, that's a lot of land there that is quite accessible to Fremantle.
I just love the Roros. They come in, they're works of art in their own
building.
Way.
Yeah, I call them a moving building. Yes. They come into town.
Big bricks of the sea. Astonishing things. So, yes, we've got this challenge. There's a major land use study happening for the whole of the port area, but particularly the northern side. And it's going to try to answer, I think, a lot of those questions you've posed. And Fremantle people are going to have to become involved.
Yeah.
Involved in that.
And that's good. Sometimes you need to kick up the bum. And sometimes that's at the risk of losing or something big changed dramatically that you don't want to happen. And if that's what it takes to get people involved again, and we have a very involved community, we have very high a percentage of people that vote in local elections compared to other areas, it's still not really high.
It's pretty high.
But it's, it, and that shows, that's that statistic that underpins, hey, we give a crap. So it gives me confidence that when topical things come up, even if the result isn't what I want, well, yeah, because I'm one of 30,000, it's not just my decision. And if everyone's putting their say in and I've advocated strongly for what I believe and used all the power that I have as a business person, as a resident, as an advocate, and the decision goes the other way, well, at least I was there doing it versus sitting around doing nothing. And we can pull those little levers that we have, a very small amount of influence for everything from new murals or even just connecting business owners who we know that would actually work well together, or calling in, saying to the city, saying, hey, look, this person really wants to do a thing. And in our experience, it is achievable, but they're just hitting a couple of roadblocks. And maybe, can we have a closer look at those roadblocks and just how do we get over them? How do we assist them to get where they want, which is going to be a better place? Their thing will be better, a venue, a cafe, well, and then Frio's better.
I can see you're going to be running a council business mediation service before long, Michael.
That'd be pretty cool.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, I see something that I hadn't expected, more than discovering new eras of history and areas of Fremantle through our tours and being invited into different spaces and learning more and hearing perceptions. That's a lot of exciting things. But for me, the biggest surprise of running, creating this business and becoming more embedded in Fremantle is how much more I give a crap. And I already cared a lot. And then as a result, following and being more involved with local politics and filling out more surveys and emailing more people, realizing that you can have a impact, especially in a small municipality like Fremantle, and that if I take a tour of 10 people, I can affect 10 people's opinion. But are there some levers that we can pull where you pull, change more people's opinion and help that broader perception that people enjoy, just enjoy Frio more? That's an exciting, I never thought I'd care like that, but it's
wonderful. And we'll bring this conversation to an end. I'm going to rush outside and start walking the streets, Michael. When I wander about South Fremantle, where I live, just down the road here, I come across some crazy streets. There's a street in South Fremantle called McLaren Street, which is a crazy street. But I think it's the craziness. It's odd to look at. It doesn't have many trees. It's got some 60s, 70s sorts of houses on bigger blocks. It's got some other. Sort of encapsulates everything about, on one view, the disorganisation of South Fremantle or Fremantle more generally. Yeah. But in Fremantle, in this old part of Fremantle, where you take people on walking tours, do you have, for whatever crazy reason, a favourite street you mightn't even tell people about?
I have a favourite street that I tell people about on every tour, because if you care about it, you gotta say it, right? So for me, it's Pakenham Street, just around the corner from here, and it's for so many reasons, but we come down off the Cappuccino Strip and we call it a block off the main drag, and we go down Nan Street, Pakenham, and then back up Bannister. And in that one block, we see a small bar, two restaurants, three cafes, two hotels, and a microbrewery. It's so close to the center of town. And also, you stand on Pakenham Street, a little one-way street, and I always say, look, we're here not for the buildings, but look at the view behind me. And you can look all the way through Pakenham Street. You can see the working port, a ship being unloaded or a ship passing by in the distance. And you really feel that connection, current connection to our port maritime city, which then reflects our heart and our heritage and how we really came to be or got going, is that working maritime port city. And it's all still happening on top of each other. And you can stand in front of the old sardine processing facility on one side. It's now apartments, or the old bait supply building that's got a hole in the wall cafe. And it just, for that, for me, we're so fortunate that it has all those overlays. And then I'm very biased though, because my favorite building in Frio is on Pakenham Street, and it's the Fowler's building, because both sets of my grandparents worked in there.
Well, that's a very good reason to love it.
Yeah, so the fact that it's still there means I can talk about it and see it, and the way it's used today is lovely as modern apartments, but also the fact that it's still there, I can tell the story of my grandma roasting tea there and my nanny and pop meeting there, and you know, the rest is history sort of idea. And I love that we can go back through and still have that connection to old, but stand in front of something very new at the same time. It's very special.
Michael Deller, thanks for talking to me, and all the best of luck with Fremantle Tours, and we hope they go on forever.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.